One of the things we emphasize in Lent is the need for self-denial fasting. This has given Lent in some people's minds a rather bad reputation, as if Lent is all bad and burdensome and it's against us. That would be a sad misunderstanding of why we practice self-denial. We practice self-denial because there are things in us that are out of order. Sins, first of all, but even things that are not sinful, but are distractions or attachments or just clutter. So we have to get things out of the way. Now, it's relatively easy to get external things out of the way. I mean, you can give up chocolate if you want to, or Facebook, and you say, oh, that's so hard to do. Well, not that hard, because after a while, you break the habit of that external behavior, and it's not a big loss. But changing our inner attitudes, that is hard. Changing our way of thinking and our way of relating to people and putting ourselves first, that's a hard thing to change. And sometimes we don't even notice it. In fact, most of the time, we don't realize how much self-importance creeps into our what seems like ordinary life to us. That's why Lent, in addition to calling us to self-denial, is also challenges us to look beyond the surface and try to expose those inner dynamics, whatever in us makes us put ourselves first. It's a very unpleasant work to do. It's like something like when you know you have to go to confession and you sit down and you make an examination of conscience and you realize, oh, there's more than I thought at first. It's terrible, but it's also good. This kind of inventory of our disorders. Well, I mention this because today's readings have this kind of cutting quality to them. They are meant to expose some of these attitudes that are really problematic. The expression that came to mind as I was looking at these readings is the phrase that I learned from Pope Francis, at least I first heard it, I think, from Pope Francis, the expression spiritual worldliness. I haven't heard him say it lately, but in the beginning of his pontificate, I think even in one of his first, maybe his first encyclical or one of his first documents, he has a section on spiritual worldliness. And I remember we spoke about it in the community quite a bit back then. The expression comes not from Pope Francis, it comes, I think, from Cardinal de Lubac, the great theologian of the 20th century. But it's a great expression because it captures something of what is our problem. Now, what is this spiritual worldliness? We know worldliness. When we think of worldliness, we think of the man in the big car and flashy clothes and women and drugs, and he's living the life of self-indulgence, and you say, well, he's a worldly person. Spiritual worldliness is different. It's the same, but on the its appearance is different. So it's the same attitude of self-indulgence, but with a religious veneer, a religious appearance. And it's a very dangerous attitude, because it looks good, but that good appearance hides deep selfishness. Now, this is not a modern problem, and it's not made up by Pope Francis. The classic example of spiritual worldliness is the Pharisees. And that's why Jesus spent so much time criticizing the Pharisees. But in today's readings, we're not talking about Pharisees. Let's look at what is said here. In the reading from Jeremiah, Jeremiah is being countered. His ministry is being rejected by the people. And listen to what the people say. Let's contrive a plot against Jeremiah. Let's get rid of Jeremiah. And then they say, it will not mean the loss of instruction from the priests, nor of counsel from the wise, nor of messages from the prophets. In other words, they want to keep priests and prophets and religious stuff in place. They want to keep the appearance of being good religious people in place. They just want to get rid of Jeremiah. Why? Because his message is challenging them more deeply. He's convicting their conscience. They're not saying we're going to be worldly, we're going to throw off religion, we're just going to live a selfish life. They're saying, let's get rid of Jeremiah and we'll live a spiritually worldly life, a spiritual worldly life, spiritual worldliness. This attitude, I think, is exposed also in today's gospel. This is the great story of the request of the two sons of Zebedee and the mother that they get special places in the kingdom. Let us sit at your right and at your left when you come into your kingdom. It's a great story because it describes what is such a human reality. You could imagine this. In fact, this would make a great movie. All these characters. First of all, Jesus calls the 12 aside and gives them a private instruction about his upcoming passion, death, and resurrection. He reveals to them exactly why he's going to Jerusalem. It's a very serious mission. It will lead to his death, and he will rise on the third day. So that's what he tells them. The very next thing that comes up is the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Now, how she got into the picture, I don't know, because he was talking to the 12 by themselves. So they must have told their mother, or I don't know what how she got in there, but she gets into the picture and says, well, let me ask you a favor. What do you want? Well, command that these two sons of mine sit one at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. Classic stage mother attitude. The mother wants her boys to be up on top. Well, every mother wants that for her children. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Mothers are supposed to do everything that they can for the good of their children. But it's a kind of worldliness. It's spiritual worldliness. She's not saying, I want my boys to have a place in Herod's court. I want my boys to have a place in the kingdom. They can both have a status in this world, and they can be connected to this holy man, Jesus, at the same time. Spiritual worldliness. At the root of it is always selfish ambition, self-centeredness, self-glorification. It just looks religious. So Jesus, and the reason, one of the reasons I love this story is that Jesus carefully distinguishes between the right kind of ambition, spiritual ambition, and the dangers. He doesn't simply say, get out of my sight, or you're selfish, you're hypocrites. He doesn't even criticize them. He questions what they're really looking for and whether they're really willing to follow. You do not know what you're asking. Isn't that a beautiful way of getting them to ask themselves, well, what are we asking? You do not know what you're asking. The natural reaction will be, well, we're asking for this. But wait a minute, do you really understand what that means? Can you drink the chalice that I am going to drink? another very gentle way of inviting them to share in the passion. The chalice is the cup of suffering, a participation in his passion. Can you, you say you want this glorious place, can you take the steps necessary to get to that place? Can you humble yourself in order to be exalted? Or are you just going to focus on being exalted? If your only ambition is being exalted, you'll be humbled. But if you're willing to humble yourselves, meaning submit to God's way of exalting us, if you're willing to put aside selfish ambition for higher purposes, for the glory of God and for the good of others, well then you will be exalted. In fact, you'll be more highly exalted than you have in mind. But you have to drink the chalice. It's the chalice, they say it sounds nice to drink from a chalice. It's talking about suffering here. That's going back to what I said about Lent. Lent has this negative reputation because it talks about self-denial. Well, that's part of drinking the chalice. There are things in our lives that we have to cut out. We have to almost violently fight against. It's a suffering. Well, James and John say, sure, we can drink the chalice, sure. Jesus says, yes, so you will. You will. Remember what happened to James and John. James, the first of the 12 to be martyred. John, the last of the 12 to die. But they had plenty of suffering in between. Then along come the other 10. Again, this is human nature on display. It's good psychology. What happens when people start to rise up? Crab mentality. What are you two doing? Who are you to rise up above us? They pull them down. They get indignant at the two brothers, as if they've done something wrong to them. So Jesus says, spiritual worldliness. Your focus is all on yourselves. You're only angry at these two because you want to look better than them. You don't care if they advance. What you care about is that you advance and you're above them. So when they look like they're above you, you get all bent out of shape about it. So he says, you're getting it all wrong. You're infected with spiritual worldliness. He makes a comparison between the way the rulers of the Gentiles exercised their greatness and the way his followers, the followers of Jesus, will exercise greatness. It's worldliness, and the two are worldliness and humility, not worldliness and spiritual worldliness, because they're basically the same. The rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Their great ones make their authority over them felt. That constant rising up, that constant boast, even if it's a subtle boast, it's a display. When it's done in the world, we say that's the way politicians are, that's the way rich people are, that's the way big deal people are. They are always making a big deal out of themselves to get their name in the papers. In the church, the same, although it doesn't look quite so gross, but all climbing, making sure we have a good appearance, making sure we are honored, making sure that we're at least recognized, spiritual worldliness. Of course, it's a bigger danger for clergy, but for any religious people, it's a danger. Anyway, let's get to the heart of the matter here. Jesus, in order to cut through this attitude, says, this is not the way it should be with you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant. So if you want to be great, Forget about yourself. You see, this humility is a tricky thing, isn't it? Because as soon as you want to be humble, you're not humble. As soon as you're focusing on being humble, you're not humble. Because you're focusing on yourself. Humility is a kind of self-abandonment. Well, I'm not going to worry about that now. This person has needs. This has to be done. I have a job to do. I can't worry about myself now. But that's where humility can grow. But as soon as we start saying, I'm going to be humble, we're not going to be humble. It's self-defeating. Okay, so Jesus puts it this way. Whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Strong language. Then he points to himself. This is the Son of Man. He did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The antidote then to spiritual worldliness is not making ourselves humble or making ourselves anything. It's emptying ourselves. It's making a gift of ourselves. It's serving. So as we strive in Lent, let's set ourselves aside. That's sometimes a very difficult thing to do. But look at what God wants us to do, and look at what needs others experience that we can actually do something about. Love of God and love of neighbor. Great commandments. Also the opposite of the spiritual worldliness that infects us. So with these words of wisdom, let's continue our Lenten journey, striving to be great, but not greatness according to our standards, the greatness that God has in mind for us, the greatness that comes from humbling ourselves, because he who humbles himself will be exalted.